Piccolo, and welcome back to the Swim Brief. It's been a long time off, and I'm excited to bring this back to you. The Swim Brief is brought to you by my employer, Jersey Wahoos Swim Club, a USA Swimming silver medal club in Mount Royal, New Jersey. You can read up more about how Jersey Wahoos brought this podcast back on my blog at chrisdcoach.com. That's C-H-R-I-S-D as in DeSantis, coach.com. Jersey Wahoos provides all levels of swimming instruction, from learn to swim to national level competition training. Since 1972, Wahoos has been one of the best clubs in the Middle Atlantic LSC, and we're proud of a tradition that values trust, honesty, and respect. I'm recording this comeback podcast on a bit of a tough day. Yesterday, Governor Phil Murphy ordered all indoor youth sports to shut down for a month, effective Friday, December 4th. This obviously will impact us directly, and we're doing our best to figure out how we can best support our membership during this time. For my first podcast back, I decided to invite my old pal Nico Messer. Right off the bat, I get into why, and then we discuss what kind of lessons we've learned from the past few months, as well as some of the changes we've had to make. I'm happy to have you back, and I hope you enjoy. Hello, and welcome back to the rebirth, the reimagining of the Swim Brief. Nico Messer, are you feeling honored to be the first guest here on the return?
Hey, Chris. Yeah, very much so. I'm not sure if I should feel honored or flattered, you know, because your list of people that you wanted to get on for the relaunch of the podcast.
Yeah,
there's way more important people on there, people that I also would like to hear from. So I don't know if it's just like, oh, they were not available right now because you just kind of wanted to get it started. And so it reverted to me. So maybe I should feel flattered. You still think, oh, OK, I can bring him on. Or maybe it's just, OK, let's start with him. So then I maybe should feel more like honored because we've been on this together a couple times, but we'll have one and then we'll hope the good ones come after this.
Well, okay. So let me explain. There's a couple things going on here. First off, I thought it would be a nice bookend because one thing that you and I have going is probably one of my last, you know, pre-corona experiences was with you over in Norway, and we'll get into that a little bit here on the podcast. So that's sort of a nice bookend. Like, you and I were together sort of right before everything changed in the world, that's a good thing. And then the other part of this is, you know, I want the Swim Brief to provide stuff that you're not getting on other podcasts. And I did a little bit of market research, right? That I've been out there. I've been trying to listen to the Brett Hawk podcast. I can't do it. I just cannot. I'm sorry. I like Brett Hawk as a person. I actually like the guests that he's bringing on. I want to be able to listen to it. I can't. But setting that aside, and you look at these other podcasts, one of the biggest holes they have, there's not enough Nico Messer on those podcasts.
Yeah, I mean, don't know if that's an indication of quality.
Show me one of these other podcasts that has a sufficient amount of Nico on it, and then I'll stop inviting you on, you know? But like, until then, you got to give the people what they want. And I've spoken to a number of people who say, are you going to have Nico Messer back on again? So it's buzzing in my ear, and then I think, okay, let's do it. So help people catch up a little bit. What you know, I always think it's interesting. Like, we're all going through in some ways this common experience. Like, life has changed dramatically, but based on where you are in the world, it's been quite different. So walk us through a little bit what the last, I guess, 8 months have been like for you. You know, like, I last saw you at the end of February, and a lot's changed in my life. You can, you know, we'll talk about that a little bit too, but I'm guessing a lot's changed in your life. So what's it been these last 8 9 months?
Yeah, I've been at home a lot, like a lot of other people. But as you said, you know, after you left Norway, we pretty much went into shutdown about a week after you left. And really that happened for no apparent reason at that time, you know, for us, because it wasn't really an issue in Europe. It was starting to be an issue in Italy. You know, it was coming up, but we didn't understand the extent of what we're going to go through as like each country or like as the continent Europe, right? And I thought, oh, okay, I just have to send them home for maybe a week, 10 days or 2 weeks, and we'll just keep low and then get right back into it. And the way it was back then in Norway is we came back from training camp, you know. We were getting ready to swim, not nationals, it was like our Bergen swim meet, but it was like a qualifying meet, so we were getting ready to get more rest, get ready to compete. And I'm like, oh, okay, not too bad. We'll just, it's not fitting our plan, it's not perfect, but I'll just take this as our rest or taper, and then we'll just train again before the meet, and we'll be rested and we'll be fine, and it won't impact us. 3 days after we were home, we pretty much learned that this is not going to be a 2 week thing.
Yeah.
And the way it went is, oh, okay, no coaching going on. Sorry, can't pay. So I was, like a lot of people, I was left without any pay, without anything to do, which means I just wasn't paid to be on deck, but I was still expected to work with the athletes, right? Whatever capacity was possible at that time, you know, what we were not allowed to meet or do anything. We didn't have the issues that a lot of the clubs in the US face, where they wanted to switch over to like Zoom and Dryland, you know, because the insurance is not that big of an issue over here in Europe, right? We can just stop.
They're not worried about liability. Yeah.
No, we can just send them programs, right, and have them do it. And we don't have to be worried about getting sued if one of the kids like falls off a bike or something like that, and we told them to go and do a bike ride. So that was pretty easy, but also we were not expecting it at that extent, and it takes a lot of preparation. You know, it's not like you knock out a dryland plan for the next 2 months in like a day and send it, and then you're just sitting at home on the couch and waiting for people to do it, right? And you also had to figure out, because kids had to go to school, but all of a sudden their school was at home from bed, and some kids had school from 8 to 10 in the morning, some had it from 10 to noon, and some only had it in the afternoon. So it's also not like you could tell them, oh, do this in the morning, do this in the afternoon, because their schedule would just not match.
Right.
So what I ended up is I actually almost worked more in the beginning till I figured out what everyone was doing and what we could do. Yeah. And we got into a good routine, and it went from us like expecting to do this for a few weeks to do this for 3 months.
Yeah.
Which, you know, it worked perfectly fine. They did okay. It was hard, like, for everybody. You know, we could literally not meet to maybe at the end, where they would start to meet in small groups of two. But it wasn't easy. But also then at the same time, well, I, like a lot of people, I wasn't getting paid. There were some other things going on. And well, I decided to leave, which you know, I felt like it was in a way that I wasn't achieving what I wanted to achieve there, because I thought there was a lot of things that could go very, very good over there, a lot of potential over there, you know. That's also why I brought you over. But sometimes things don't go the way you plan it, and that has been a little bit more the case in my life than maybe in some other, you know. And that's fine. But what sucked is I liked the athletes, you know. It wasn't the problem that I didn't think we didn't do well. I mean, you saw, you know, I had some, I wasn't selling very good what we were doing. There were still some kids that even after swimming like a lifetime best for 7 seconds in training, they still wouldn't believe what we were doing is working and they're doing well. So I had some issues to like really get breaking the ice, the Scandinavian ice, right, and get through them and convince
literally
doing. That was rather difficult. But aside from that, I wasn't worried too much. You know, I thought they would turn around, and if not, they still showed up. Even though they told me that they didn't like it, they still kept showing up. So I wasn't too worried about that. And I thought it's going to work out. But the bad thing with me leaving there, and that's why it really left a bad feeling with me, is I had to tell the athletes, I'm not leaving because of you guys, but I have to leave because I don't want to stay. I don't want to be here and not have fun and make you not have fun and like be in a situation where all of a sudden they're going to have to make me go. Right. And that was kind of hard because with some of the athletes, we start to see some good things going. And it was a bad time to leave because I wasn't really allowed to see them, you know?
Right. You couldn't hold a meeting and go like, hey, guys, you look at them in the eye. And
So I kind of left without really being able to explain it to them, you know? And last time I saw them, I was like, all right, let's get ready. Let's go and get something good out of here. So that was a little bit weird. And I didn't know what to do. I think we were talking at that time somewhere that I wasn't sure what I was going to do, that maybe due to the pandemic that was going on, you know, a lot of the club teams, they were trying to figure out how to keep their coaches on staff.
Right.
More so than hiring new people. Right. Not a lot of teams were saying, oh, yeah, please.
Let's get some new payroll going here. Yeah.
We have some extra cash. Let's hire some people, right? So I wasn't sure if I was going to be a coach or do it in the same way. And also, I was a little bit unsure because I felt like I failed, you know, with what I was trying to do over there, and I didn't. So I was, like a lot of people do sometimes, I was going through a period where I had some doubts, but mostly doubts about my abilities, more so in the way where I was trying to figure out, can I really do this? You know, am I good enough to be a coach at the level that I would like to be a coach? And for the kids that I would like to coach? And I wasn't sure.
Yeah.
Because I've gotten a lot of mixed feedback, you know, the last stage of where I was, and I was trying a lot, so I wasn't sure. And all of a sudden, like, the way it goes, you know, we had a girl over coming from Norway. You met her from Switzerland that moved over to train with us. And Corona also had her move back.
Yeah.
First, because her mom was a little bit worried that she's going to be stuck over in Norway without family.
Sure.
But then also, you know, she was trying to switch and join the university over there. And due to Corona, they didn't accept any of foreign students. So she just kind of had no choice other than leave.
Yeah.
The club team that she left, they were going through some changes. They heard from her that I may no longer be staying in Norway. And this is how things go. So we came to talk. I decided to give this a shot, even though I guess in any other circumstance, I may not have considered this job.
Right.
And I'm very happy that I did. And I mainly did it for a very cool reason. You know, I think I'm not sure if a lot of people do this. The guy I'm working with now used to be my coach when I was like a little kid.
Oh, I didn't know that part of the story. You and I have communicated a little sporadically here back and forth over this time, but I wasn't expecting that. So how old were you when you swam for this guy? What's his name?
Oh, I was like 14 or something like that.
Yeah. You know, and okay, perfect.
The age group teams when I was swimming, And let's say back then, you know, he still is, and he was back then. He's a very good coach, but we didn't always see eye to eye when I was an athlete on many things. But it's just because, you know, I was 14. I was a dumb kid.
That's peak dumb kid age. Like that's the top age for being like not, you know, good to your coach. That's like
exactly right. So I did a lot of things now, and like, and when I think about it, it's not like I regret them, but I'm like, oh man, you were really stupid and disrespectful, and you know, I was just a dumb kid.
Yeah.
But also, so we talked, aside from talking, you know, with the other people from the board and the club, and I found that the way it is, you know, everywhere where you were as a swimmer or where you were as a coach, you take some of the things. You are your own, but you're never your own. You're always a collection of a lot of experiences, impressions
for sure.
That you collected over time, right? And I just noticed that a lot of the things that I do, they come from him. You know, like being a maniac collecting data on training and everything. I don't track the volume. Well, unless I do, that's another podcast I can do, right? But I figured a lot of the stuff, you know, even like some of the files that I was using on my computer.
Yeah,
are based on stuff that he did for us that I was using.
Okay.
So, and we just talked, and it's funny because that was how much probability you have to be in a place where you're gonna work with the guy who was your coach, you know. And the funny thing is, and that's on paper, but now I'm his boss, which is very funny. Right.
Wait a second. How did that happen? Hold on.
Well, there's because I was hired as the head coach, right? And he's kind of like the head age group coach, but it's like I'm his boss, which is completely stupid to me because I would never suggest that I'm his boss. But on paper, that's how it is. But that's just making me laugh every day. But it's been so good, you know, because he has been away from coaching for a bit before he got back with this team. He only got back with his team last year, and he took a break for 10 years because he did what you did. You know, he started to be the guy at home taking care of the kids.
Right.
It has been great. I was hoping for this. That's why I decided to accept the position, because I really wanted to work with him, but I could not have thought that it would go this well. It's just a lot of things that I know it's going this well because he knows a lot about me.
Yeah.
And he, but he also understands that I'm no longer the little 14-year-old kid, you know?
Yeah.
And it's really going really well. And I really enjoy it. I think it's a really special thing. It's really cool. I'm still learning a lot again. Because of course now when we discuss things, we both have two different angles.
Right.
You know, I have the angle, I have my experience as a coach, but I also have the experience of me being a swimmer for him. And he has the same thing. He has the experience, I was a coach, but he has also the experience, I coached you.
Yeah.
And it's pretty cool. It's really easy to work this way. And it's also very productive, which is something that I have missed in a long time, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I feel so many parts of that as you're describing it, that resonate to me. Of course, we're recording this in my office, so you're going to hear a phone ringing every now and then. That's just the production quality you expect from the Swim Brief. That's, it's better than my kids yelling in the background, right? So, there's a couple parts of this that really stuck with me. First off, I just want to ask you really, I'm already unemployable in Denmark, and I provided a positive reference for you for your job in Norway. So now I feel like I'm unemployable in Norway. Would you consider making some trouble in Sweden so that I'm totally blocked out of all the Scandinavian countries? Is that something you've thought about, or?
I haven't. I think you're still okay in Sweden.
Yeah.
But you certainly don't mention my name when you apply in Norway. That could hurt your chance of getting employed.
Well, I guess I'm not sure I could ever get my wife to move to Norway anyway, so it's probably a moot point. The other part is I think honestly, although it was so hard, like I don't want to discount how hard it is, how hard it was to step away from day-to-day coaching and try to start my own business. I mean, I was feeling really good about where I'd gotten to business-wise when I saw you in February. I built something from the ground up where I was making a reasonable income. And, 2 weeks later, like my last sort of big normal swimming event, I was on the deck at the college swim coaches invite there for kids who, have B cuts, but haven't qualified for NCAAs. And I was, pressing the flesh and talking to people and setting up stuff for the next year and, planning to sort of expand the whole operation. And then I just got punched in the mouth. And, I think part of me always wants to acknowledge, like, yes, there's a demand for some virtual stuff in the space that I was doing, but I honestly found I was not interested in it at all. I think a lot of people are having this experience, I know, in sort of white collar jobs working from home, that yes, you can do your job from home. You don't particularly enjoy doing a lot of the interactive parts where you interact with other people from home. And my whole job was basically my interactions with coaches and swimmers and stuff. And the part that I really enjoyed about it was traveling to a place and being there with the people and hearing, and I just thought, yes, I could continue to try and do this stuff, but like, it's again, let's just like you said, it's not going to be fun. And I think definitely having taken that step away and sort of prioritized my home life a bit more, I just recognize that I'm going to burn out on anything work-wise. That it's not to say that I should be smiling and walking around the whole time, like I'm having the time of my life. But if it's a real drag day to day, I'm going to quickly find myself going like, why? Why am I doing this? And of course, the other part of it was like you, my daughter's school closed down on like March 18th and they said, we'll do it for a week. And I thought, well, okay, maybe it'll be 2 or 3 weeks. She hasn't set foot in a school building since then.
Oh, so okay.
It's been
how's the schooling going.
It's hard. We're going to have to mark this podcast explicit. It is hard as shit. It's been really, really hard. My son too, who's 2 years old, was the daycare shut down. So then I had both kids at home all day, and that was March to August. He actually he went back in August, and he's been there since then, which has been a huge relief because. The spring of homeschooling was honestly a complete disaster. At some point I had to stop sending my kindergartner to virtual kindergarten because she was in tears and, it was only half an hour a day anyway. So I just figured it was not worth, all the stress for something that really wasn't. So I think, again, they had to come up with it on the fly. Things have been a little bit more organized in the fall. We've had a couple of false starts where they said they were going to start in September, but then they didn't. They said they were going to start in November, but then they didn't. Now we're going to start in February. We'll see. I'm at this point, I'm planning for a whole school year.
Did some stuff learning out in your garden and like chasing animals and stuff like that. It looked like a lot more fun than school.
Well, so what I figured out eventually, the best experience was, you know, after we realized we were settling in for the long haul, we contacted, like, we were, you know, we probably had 3 months where we were not seeing anybody but the four of us in our family. And then we made a very sort of cautious expansion to add another family, mm-hmm. to the sort of group of people that we saw. And we bubbled up and myself and the mom of that family, she had two children as well. We just, like, we woke up in the morning, we took all the kids outside for 3 hours. There was a park by me that, when sort of pre-pandemic, was a place that wasn't designated as such, but people just let their dogs run around,
mm-hmm. yep.
Off leash there. And then they shut it down during that period when they thought it was a good idea to shut down. I mean, we're rewinding all these, like, weird things that someday in history we'll look back like, why did they do that? When they shut down all the public parks, because they thought, like, that was a thing that was going to help, even though it turns out you want people to go outside mm-hmm. and spread out and not be inside, you know, breathing on each other. But anyway, they shut them down. And when they reopened it, they decided they were actually going to enforce the law in that park, which was that you can't have your dog off a leash. So the result was that people took the park back. Instead of it being a dog park, it became a people park. Cool. And we spread a towel out. And basically, we didn't organize anything. We just set the kids loose. And eventually, yeah, they got bug catchers and they started collecting different bugs that were growing in the park. They invented different games. My daughter learned to climb a tree. She'd never climbed a tree. I mean, we're a city kid, right? She never climbed a tree in her whole life. She climbed to the top of this tree. It was probably, you know, four body lengths, you know, of her sort of off the ground. And now she says her favorite thing to do is climb trees. So it was really, and not to just make this all about my kids, there was actually coaching applications to it, because what mm-hmm. I saw was, my kids, in terms of, like, their physical competency, their ability to move, what they could do with their bodies, it grew, like, exponentially, and it grew just by letting them, like, sort of loosely figure it out on their own outdoors. And I've always kind of noticed this, like, if you look at, like, a 1-year-old, a kid that's just learned to stand, you'll always notice, like, they can do a deep squat with their butt basically on the ground. Like, they have a level of movement that somehow we unlearn as adults. And it's very interesting because you're looking at this person who's just sort of barely doing the thing, you know, walking, that we sort of take for granted. But then they have all these other physical competencies. And it made me realize that kids are probably, like, me, the kids that I coach, teenagers even, that are older than my kids, they're more resilient than I thought. Mm-hmm. And that'll come back around when you hear about what I'm doing training wise, because I hinted at that to you before. I mean, the other
I was going to, like, make a big jump and ask about this, if we have already unlearned what we seem to have learned from this time not being in pools.
I don't think so. Hopefully not, because you know, as you and I discussed before we started this, I've been having this great time, and people can, you know, I won't talk too much more about it on the podcast, because you can catch up on it reading all my blogs, what I've been up to coaching wise. I'm back on the deck day in, day out. I'm coaching a group of high school age swimmers. That's a short version of it. And but I'm looking at a month off, or at least 4 weeks off, you know, and based on the conversation we just had, who knows how long it's really going to be.
Yeah.
Starting on Friday. And I think we're going to see if we can't figure something out to keep in contact. But hopefully we haven't unlearned those lessons, because it's the other thing that's been incredible is, yes, we've gotten back into swimming and we've been doing this, that, and the other thing. We had a meet 3 weeks ago. Kids swim incredible at it. And they'd been back in the water. They were off March to June here. And then they were in, you know, June to November. And they were really, I mean, all throughout the team, they were ready to do something. I guess on some level, I'm not surprised by that. But on the other level, like, yeah, it does make you question whether you need to swim every day, all year round, you know, without breaks, whether that is even the ideal way to go about things. And of course, you don't want to simulate a pandemic to change up. And there's all sorts of other there's all sorts of other considerations you have to have. But yeah, there's a lot. And I also, the other last thing I want to note is, because it's just a, you know, this podcast is sponsored by my employer now, Jersey Wahoos Swim Club.
We need to mention this.
Yeah, I got to drop the sponsor name in here. My boss, Paul Donovan, is a guy that I've gotten along with really well. I had the luck of, that was a club that I was working with for a whole year before I came to work. It's really, you know, like you said, you knew your coach. I felt like I had a good chance to sort of preview what it would be like to work here. Quite a bit ahead of time. But the real reason I want to shout him out is one of the things him and I have often joked about is all the people who say, I don't count yardage. I feel like that's actually a tell. That's like you, because you even said it in your answer. You're like, I don't count yardage, and yet I collect all this data. So maybe you're not directly
counting. I care very much and I count, you know, but it's very funny because the team I've been on, they've been used to, and some of that was also to the pandemic, you know, it just changed a little bit, but they were just getting in and they were just swimming. I think at some point they didn't even care what it was, or I would go as far as say they maybe didn't even know what they were doing really. They were just swimming for 2 hours, you know?
Yeah.
And it just added up to 6.5 or something, but just something a lot in my books, right? And now I know what we're doing, and we haven't done that much. I think we've passed 5K once. So, but it's not to say that passing 5K is good or bad. It's to say right now, it's not what we can do. This group is not ready to do whatever it is. What we're able to do adds up to less.
Yeah.
And we started with very little, like a lot of people, because we didn't have enough pool space for everybody. We didn't have the usual hours.
Yeah.
So it was different, right? But the way I just started to look at it, and it comes from I have the term from Vern Gambetta.
Mm-hmm.
I look at it as density, you know, not as volume. And by density, I don't just look at the volume that we do. Of course, I track it, you know, I know every meter that we swim, and I put it somewhere and I know how much it adds up. But I also look at, oh, okay, what else did we do? Are they having a lot of tests? You know, right now we're in a period where the kids are back to school. Right. Almost school. And all the teachers all of a sudden feel, oh, we didn't get to do any tests during Corona. Let's do them now.
Now.
And it's like, not one. Let's do like 11 at once.
Right.
Because it's really important that we know that they have good grades.
Yeah.
So right now, a lot of the kids, they're just tired in practice. And it's not because they're tired. It's just their brain is tired. They don't even, they're not even able to do most of the things that I would like to do right now. So some of the kids tell me, oh, I can't show up. I'm like, okay, then you can't. Like, I'm worried, you know, like me, the coach, I'm worried if they tell me, oh, I will not be here today, tomorrow, and the day after tomorrow. Right. But I also know, you know, if they don't study, they will not show up for a very long time because their parents will shut them down.
Because
school has just been a big issue. I don't know how it was in the US, but kids didn't get any grades here due to Corona. By the end of the school year. So there's a full year of students. They have, we don't know if they passed their grade or not. Like they actually did, you know, like my cousin, he had to redo 1 year. So instead of finishing high school, he's now in his last year of high school because he had to redo. But now he's really mad because all of his classmates, his former classmates, some of them maybe were not as smart as he was, but now they got their high school diploma without any of the exams because there was no grading, there was no exams. They just passed and he didn't. That's not to say that he would have passed, but you know, he could have had it easy if he had had a better year before, if he wasn't too lazy to get the good grades, right? So now the teachers are very worried because there's a whole lot of people that, oh, we don't know if they're going to find jobs, if they're going to be able to go to university because they didn't get grades and blah, blah, blah. And now they feel like they need to make up for this so that they get a whole bunch of grades.
I just want to interrupt to explain to people from the U.S. because this is sort of a point of order. And I'm going to make a couple assumptions about the Swiss. Because you got kids in gymnasium, right? That's what high school is called. So it's very funny to people in America that high school is called gymnasium. I think it's called that in Switzerland. It's called that in Germany, Denmark, the Scandinavian
most
countries.
European countries, yeah.
Yeah, they have this term gymnasium, but it really just means
high school.
High school. And one of the sort of unique things that make that system unique from the high school system in the U.S., so that at least I know happens in Denmark, is you have these oral examinations at the end of the year that are hugely consequential to whether you pass or fail or get a good grade or get a bad grade or whatever. So what you're saying is those were called off, obviously, because there was a lot of problems being able to hold that kind of stuff. So there were either kids that were passed through based on how they were doing before that. It's actually like very consequential to the school year to not be able to have examinations, where Americans sort of may be thinking like, oh, well, you know, you write your paper or you know, your homework grade or whatever that, you know, they'll just figure that out. Because they don't necessarily have that system of those exams at the end of the year. Yeah.
So to explain easily, if some of the kids decide, oh, I don't want to go and keep studying, I'm not going to go to college. If they're going to go and look for a job, they're going to get
plenty of people do right out of gymnasium.
Yeah, because we have the system, right, where they're going to go in and actually learn on a job for 3 or 4 years, and they're going to get a diploma that they know how to do the job.
Right.
But usually, if you apply, if there's maybe three people applying and there's only one position open for that job, then they will look at your grades. And of course, they will take the kid with the better grades, you know?
For sure.
So that's why people freaked out. And, oh, kids are not going to get a job because they don't have grades. People don't know how to select people if we don't have grades.
Right.
How do we know who's better than someone else? I'm like, well, people usually know because they talk to the people, right? They notice if people are morons if they talk to them.
Yeah.
It's as simple as that, but it's people.
Do your own examination. Find out what they know.
And it just makes me laugh. But I really look at density, and it makes it a lot different. It still has me worried, you know, because I can't just flip the switch and turn this off if people tell me, oh, coach, I'm not coming to practice. Like, it makes me mad, you know, because I want them to be there. Because we know that consistency is key. But as you said, you know, does consistency mean I have to be there 365 days in a row? Or what does it mean? And how is recovery part of density? And stuff like that. So I just started to look at it a little bit different, and it makes me less worried. And also it makes me a lot less worried now And that's not to devalue the kids, but the people I work with right now, it doesn't matter. It literally won't, you know. For once, we don't have any meets. There's nothing going on. But it's not like, oh, we have this kid on the squad, and if we don't get tomorrow's practice in, she's going to lose the 50 freestyle at the next national championships by 1:10 because we missed this practice. It's not the case. So I just want them to be there if they can. I want them to have a good time, but I'm really not worried about that stuff anymore. And at the same time, I'm very worried about it, you know, because... because of the volume, right? But because I think it's still bad, you know, when you are at the point where you have so much issues in school that you cannot come to practice. Because I just know that if you start to have problems in school, you will start to have problems in swimming and in other areas in your life, right? So I need you to take care of it so you can do both. But I also think some of these kids, they're going to go home after school. Their head is going to be so full. And they're not going to sit down and study. You know, I think they're going to lose more time going home trying to study than if they would come in and maybe swim for half an hour, go home and study then.
Sure.
Because then they know, oh, I only have this much time to study. And it needs to be really productive. But the problem is some of those kids have long ways to go. So it's just not feasible for them to do it, to come to practice for half an hour, because the pool is not just like 10 minutes from where they live. It's maybe an hour. And then it gets really unpractical. So, but yeah, I track and I do count yardage very much.
So this is the moment where I want to say, so listeners of this podcast will know that I think the people that really like some of what we've done, this was especially some of the early stuff where we, you know, talk through some different types of workouts and stuff. So I'm listening to this and now I can confidently say I'm doing more volume than Nico.
You probably are. Yeah.
And just like listeners of the podcast, like just think of that, because, you know, you probably listened to me attack Nico for doing repeat 400s. How stupid is that? Why would you do something like that? I'm telling Nico that now every Monday on the team that I coach, I do 4 800s every Monday in some form. Now, last night it ended up being 32 100s. So it wasn't 4 800s, but we did 32 100s last night. And the guys at work, like Paul and the other Jake Shackelford, who's here, they're teasing me because they've read all my podcasts. So they've read all my blogs and they've read all my podcasts, and they're teasing me that you know, I've moved over to hashtag work works. But really, honestly, I will just say, like, I'm not the head coach of the team. So, I've been given very sort of specific boundaries for what I'm trying to accomplish in a practice and how I'm trying to set this up. And I'm trying to make my practice at least a sort of sibling or cousin of what's happening on the top team, so that kids who excel in my group can move on to the next, and it won't be some foreign concept. There won't be a steep learning curve. You know, and the top team here is doing 8,000 yards in a two-hour practice, and sometimes even more than that. So again, I have to achieve a certain density in my 90-minute practices. I think we did 5,500 in it last night, so that there's some sort of translation from one to the other. And the second thing is, you know, people who have listened really carefully will know that I have always found it, even though, like, I really liked race-pace training. I thought there was a lot of value there. I liked experimenting with it and stuff. I've never thought it was that important what exactly how the practice looked on the page, basically. Like, as you say, it's one thing to swim for 2 hours, to swim 6,500 meters. I believe a race pace set can be really productive. I think 32 100s can be really productive. The trick of it is, does the coach know how to make it work? Do the athletes know how to make it work? And if those two things are true, then you can make almost anything work. You could make a 5,000 straight work if everybody knows how to make it work. I'm having a lot of fun. Again, all the people who know me as a race pace guy, just try to just calm down for a second as I say this. I'm having a lot of fun learning about a different way to run practice. Like, it's not something I've tried before in my whole swimming career. I don't think I've ever done 32 100s ever until this year. And I'm starting to learn more and more how it actually works. Like, I feel like I have a good sense of how it works. I feel like I've got athletes who know how it works. And it's like, it's fun to learn it's like learning a whole new language, basically, for how to conduct practice.
I think some of these kids here, they didn't even go through the motion in practice, they just went to practice. And it's funny, it was maybe a week ago, one of the girls on the team said that she doesn't know anymore how she was able to do those workouts. Because she's in the group where she's probably been around 4K at most, maybe 4.5. And she is struggling. She is having a hard time.
Yeah.
And she asked me, how did I do these things before? You know, because now when our workout is over, they used to be maybe halfway or two-thirds in. And she doesn't know how she did it before, but she knows that what she's doing now for her seems to be much better. And that's not saying that my practice is better than the other one, you know, in what is there and the thing, but she believes a lot more in what she does now. And she applies herself a lot more than she did before. Because now she's not just there swimming, she's not just going through motion, but she's actually trying to figure out, what do I have to do? What is this set about? What do I want to do in this practice? And it's a lot harder for her to do this than it was to just swim for 2 hours.
Yeah.
And it's funny, it's something that's changing here, you know. We had one girl, because we did have our national meet, short course nationals going on, which was very, very weird, but it happened anyway. But I had a girl, we only had one swimmer go there.
Yeah, breaststroker, right?
Yeah, for many reasons. And she hasn't done a PB in 2 years.
Wow.
And she is one of the most disciplined trainer on the team and one of the most disciplined trainer I have seen in a long time, you know. And I think she's been like this before, because that's, you don't just do this like this.
Right.
And she hasn't gotten a PB in a long time. And I didn't know what to do. And I really didn't know how to rest her. Or we didn't know if nationals are going to happen. So we kind of didn't. We were just aiming at it while not aiming at it. But our goal was just to kind of get back into it. And the goal is to swim fast, no matter if we have nationals or not, or if we have another meet. Our goal is to swim fast, right? That's the goal of a training. So we went there, I was very unsure what to expect, and she just exploded. I mean, she got three events, she got three PBs, she made a final, which I did not expect at all. And she was like seeded 40s, you know, so how do you get to the final when you're seeded that far back? But it's just, you could just see it was different because she thought she could do it.
Yeah.
And you know, that has nothing to do with myself or my workouts. In that short of a period, she was able to do it before, she just didn't believe it. And that has something to do with how things were going overall. And I think that's the biggest change. And that's one of the things that I'm afraid, you know, when we're talking about unlearning. It's something I see here, you know, like you were saying, oh, our kids, we had a meet and they were swimming so fast. And I don't know how close you tracked things, you know, when you couldn't swim and you were shut down and they were not in the pool and they did some stuff on their own and stuff like that. I know that in Norway, the people expected me to track every single thing and check up if everyone did everything that I wrote down on their daily program and stuff like that. And I'm like, no, I don't know their days. It could change. I'll just send it to them. It's a recommendation. It's ideas. They do whatever they feel they want to do. If they don't like what I write down, they go and bike. They do something else. I really didn't care. So I feel like a lot of the other sports also here in Switzerland, we saw that a lot of the kids, when they came back, when they were able to compete, when it was a little bit better and we were having a little window where stuff was happening again, a lot of them did great. And I felt like all of the feedback that I heard from some very good athletes was like, oh yeah, I didn't have my coach, I had an idea, you know, he gave me some programming, but in the end, I had to do it. I had to be there, I had to be responsible, I had to do the stuff. I had to figure it out, and it just worked. And now I feel like, you know, what I see from not just swimming, but other sports, like coaches want to take the power back. Like they want to be in control again, and that's fine, but it's people are worse again than they were when people are saying, oh, we're not going to be good because we're not training, things are horrible, and people were performing just perfectly fine, and now people are back to being worse. And why is that? Because we're doing worse stuff than we did before in some cases because people think we need to make up for it. I'm like, Jesus.
So this brings me, and I think I'll wrap the podcast on this. One of the things, so I wasn't managing the workouts with Wahoos. You know, Paul and Jake, for sure, were doing most of that when kids were off in that March to June period. You know, I came back on deck in September when everything was sort of rolling again. But what I did, you know, I was doing some work with them virtually, hosting some stuff, and I was trying to sort of draw on experiences that I had had for this. And I can say, you talk about experiences in your swimming career that had a big impact on you. I mean, I swam in college in the NESCAC conference. It's probably the first or second best Division III conference, depending on whether you... I think it's much deeper than the one Kenyon is in, but, you know, it doesn't have that sort of consistent Kenyon-Denison-type level team in it. It's a pretty good Division III swimming conference, but it was very restrictive in terms of how much interaction you could have with a coach. You effectively had your first coached practice of the year was on November 1st, and the conference championships was at the end of February. And that was your whole season. And first off, I found I was able to improve over 4 years. But the only point, I struggled the first 2 years, I didn't get any better. And what changed for me from the second to third year was, the third year I realized, like, I don't have to just do what the coach says. Like, I can come up with my own, I have complete freedom, especially in this period from March to October. Most of the year, I can decide what I'm going to do to get ready for the season. That was a huge tipping point for me. And I had all sorts of teammates that, you know, swam at a pretty good level where, but they didn't get into swim. They didn't do a swimming workout from March to October. And so, you know, it just sort of stuck with me that, like, while no swim coach would dream that up as, like, their ideal scenario for how things should be run, you had to, in that environment, you had to learn how to figure out things for yourself. And I think most swim coaches, if they really sat and reflected, most coaches sat and reflected, they want the kids that they coach to be more independent and more sort of self-driven about what they're doing. They don't like controlling everything. They don't like sort of deciding every single thing for the people that they're coaching. They want the athletes to take their own reins a little bit better. That part of it, I think you've struck on that. That's a really important positive development that I hope more people don't lose here as we sort of move back to normal life.
Yeah, I hope so too. I see a lot of things that have me worried, you know, some of the kids, but I hope that's just temporary. While some people are freaking out now that we actually can do some stuff in the pool again and it will flatten out when being in a pool is normal again.
Yeah. All right, Nico. Well, it was great. It was great catching up with you. Thanks for coming back. Between now and the next time we talk, see if you can't do something about Sweden to get me on the blacklist over there. You know, yeah. Maybe just drop a few rumors. You know, Chris doesn't like the colors blue and yellow.
That's bad.
Yeah. He thinks Lund, Dunkirk is ugly, you know, something, whatever you can do to sort of put down on the ground that'll sort of poison the water for me in Sweden, that would be great.
Yeah, I think I can probably do that.
Okay. All right. Thank you, man, and I'll talk to you again soon.
Thanks again to your employer for sponsoring this podcast.
Yeah, thanks Jersey Wabu Swim Club.
You're doing this on work time. That's the best thing that happened to swimming in a long time.
Well, people who listen to this, I'll cut an ad read actually for them on the top of this because we got to do some better marketing here at Jersey.
Yeah, absolutely. Anyway, so. Yeah.
All right, bye, Nico.
Bye, bye.
There it is, the return of the Swim Brief. I hope you enjoyed listening to that as much as I enjoyed recording it. We'll be back next week with much more. We'll keep working through that list of guests that we have. The background music that you hear on the intro here and the outro is Four More Weeks, I think very appropriate song title, by Vans in Japan. So thank you to Vans in Japan, who I've never met, for that background music. If you have questions you'd like to get answered, if you got feedback, feel free to reach out to me at my website, chrisdcoach.com. That's C-H-R-I-S-D. coach.com. You can read blogs as well there. You can read about me parenting if you click on dad stuff at the top. So plenty of different topics for you to enjoy. And thanks once again for listening to Swim Brief, and talk to you soon.